Fellow Falcoholics, what is up? Welcome to episode 191 of the Falcoholic Live. I am your host, Kevin Knight, at Falcoholic Kevin on Twitter, joined by my co-host this evening. He is Adnan Ekic, at Say Which Way. Adnan, how are we doing tonight?
Doing well. We are officially in the most deadest of dead periods in the NFL.
I don't know. I think technically the deadest, right, is like the end of mandatory minicamp in early June between like July 28th-ish, depending on the year. Because there's literally nothing happens. You know, I would say OTAs is like pretty close to nothing. And we're going to get into that tonight, obviously, and the depth of nothingness that it is. But yeah.
It definitely comes in waves of nothingness.
Yeah.
I think this is the first real wave because, you know, you have, after the season ends, obviously, it's all about draft takes. And then, you know, you have free agency coming, you have the draft, you have that to talk about ad nauseum if you want.
Yes.
And then after the draft ends, then it's all about the reaction to the draft. So you have a few weeks of that, some more free agent signings, some rumors, and then it really kind of slows down. And now we're at that point where it's completely like screeched to a halt, where yes, the NFL is a year-round sport at this point, especially.
Yeah.
But now it's like, you know, it's late May, man. Like,
yeah,
there's really not, there's the conference finals going on in the NBA and all second round in the Stanley Cup playoffs, but there's really nothing going on right about now in sports. Like, you know, early season baseball, sure.
Right. Yeah, and it seems like the Braves aren't doing as well as expected either, so it's sort of even worse for that. But yeah, I mean, this is as much as the NFL has become sort of a 12-month thing, these, you know, May, June, July is definitely the lightest of the light in terms of content. But we're going to do our best to bring you guys some interesting stuff tonight. We hope to have more OTA tidbits to talk about. Not a ton there, unfortunately. I know people are asking if I was going to be there. It's not worth my time and or money to fly down for like 2 days of OTAs that I'm not sure the media gets a ton of access to anyway. So no, I don't really have anything, you know, personally from there. But, you know, it's nice to be able to see the players, right, to see them in their new practice jerseys. We did hear about some more rookie contract signings, which is nice. It is nice to see everyone's smiling faces in the chat. Obviously, we don't really see your faces, but we see your little avatars, and that brings me joy. So it's nice to be able to hang out with you guys. But I think the majority of the show will probably dedicate to some more roster talk. We're going to get into quarterback and running back / fullback, you know, Keith Smith shout out. You know, break down those positions a little bit too. So I'm purposefully divvying this up because we could probably get to like half of the offense tonight if we wanted to, but we need to parcel out that content over the offseason. Have something to lean on.
You guys
so.
Have no idea how difficult things are right now. Like just in the world of NFL blogging, like, there's really not much going on right now. We're scheduling some roundtables. Yeah. We're doing some previews for the season, some player profiles.
Oh,
sure,
hell yeah.
But it's like like right now we are scraping the bottom of the barrel. The well is dry. It's like a drought comes every single year at this point, and we know that it's coming, and we just have to figure out how to kind of get through it.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to find a way, certainly. And that's a good time for me to talk about another little piece of content that's coming out next week. We're still deciding if it's going to be Monday or Tuesday, but the next patron Q&A session will be early next week. We're going to sneak it in just in time for May. So definitely look out for that, patrons. If you're interested in getting involved in the Patreon, the link to that is patreon.com/FalcoholicLive, sorry. And we really appreciate all 24, 25 of you supporting us there now. That's been really great. We appreciate that. As you guys can see on the YouTube channel, all of the Falcoholic podcasts, at least all the ones that I can get, are going to be sort of dual shows. So we'll have a video version and an audio version. So yeah, you can enjoy that. I know Mondays was a UDFA breakdown for the true D-gens out there that really wanted a deep dive into almost every single undrafted free agent the Falcons brought in. We did it. You know, me and Thor Nystrom, we went into it. Thor scouts 500 guys. We talked about that on Monday. So check that out if you want that sort of information. But yeah, I mean, tonight, to start with the OTAs, I mean, we really haven't gotten anything super notable. I mean, sort of the same thoroughfares from rookie minicamp, right? That Desmond Ridder, I mean, the big one, and it sort of segs into our later conversation tonight, but, you know, Desmond Ridder is impressing early, and that's not a surprise, I think, to anyone that knows Desmond Ridder's game. Like, he's a very polished, very high football IQ type of quarterback. He's going to hit the ground running faster than other rookies. You know, he's not necessarily like a Malik Willis, who I would be sort of surprised if he was really, really like locked in from day one. With Ridder, it's just like, it's never really been a question to me of like, can he be an NFL quarterback? Because I think he can, clearly. It's sort of like, what is his ceiling, and can he clean up some of the small issues that keep him from being that sort of guy that you want to build an offense around? Or is he sort of just like a guy that you sort of want to be your spot starter here and there? But so it's nice to see, obviously, that he is looking, you know, polished and poised and early leadership, all the buzzwords you want to throw in. You know, that was sort of one thing that we've seemed to been hearing consistently. I think there were mentions of Drake London, maybe, you know, looking healthy. That's obviously a good sign coming off of his ankle injury. But again, it's like OTAs. Nobody's got pads on. Don't really know too much. Don't really know too much about that. But was there any whispers otherwise that you've heard from either OTAs or minicamp that you felt worthy of mentioning, Adnan?
Honestly, I know that we have to pretend like rookie minicamp is important.
It's a big deal, you know.
Yeah, just for the sake of content. But yes. I don't think anything from rookie minicamp I don't think it's even worth mentioning. But, you know, we'll talk about it because there's nothing else. Because this is just literally just, I think the Arthur Smith talked about it last year. It's just the rookies, you know, learning where everything is. Yeah, it's like your college orientation, yeah. Or you know, it's your orientation before you start your first day of undergrad, where it's like, hey, this is where the locker room is. Maybe they'll be assigned a locker. This is where, you know, the parking lot is. This is how, you know, this is where you can get around in the training in the Flowery Branch facilities, and then everyone's out there, you know, looking nice in shorts and jerseys, and oh, yeah. You know, it's just. I don't think you'll ever hear a negative report from minicamp, just because, you know, if you do, then something's really wrong, because spring hope is eternal. But I remember, was it a few years ago, was it Tyler Starr, the former seventh round linebacker, where it's like everyone started like, you know, gushing over his performance in rookie minicamp, and, you know, this is going to be maybe the next Clay Matthews because he has the long hair and stuff. But I remember Bleacher Report articles talking about him.
Yes. But, yes.
Yeah. It's just, you know, I'm happy that the rookies have a chance to grow accustomed a little bit to the facilities, and they'll be given their playbooks, and they'll be, you know, given some of the simpler stuff to do, some of the stuff to memorize. But, you know, Desmond Ridder, I see he has. He looks like he's incredibly confident, which is, you know, very good to see. He had that Players Tribune article pretty much calling out every general manager for not taking him, which, you know, you can't knock the kid's confidence. I mean, I'm here for it.
Yeah.
But, you know, hopefully it doesn't end up like a Josh Rosen situation where he's like, oh, I'm going to make everyone regret for passing on me, and then they didn't. But yeah, I was listening to Desmond Ridder on the radio last week. He was on 92.9 The Game, the flagship station of the Falcons here in Atlanta. And he was just basically talking about how much he was embracing the opportunity to have a spirited and healthy competition with Marcus Mariota. And, you know, he's going to let the chips fall where they may. He's going to respect the coach's decisions. And, you know, he's just looking forward to going out there and working. And so far he's really saying all the right things. He looks like he has the right head on his shoulders, and he looks like the type of guy who is he has the makeup of a leader in a locker room, and that's all you can really ask for a quarterback that you just drafted a couple months ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly what you want to hear, and I'm glad Ritter has the confidence, because you sort of have to, like, if you're not confident in yourself, you're definitely not going to be able to make it in the NFL. Like, you have to, and it's like, that's why it's always, we hear all these corny stuff about, like, oh, I'm in the best shape of my life, and, like, you know, I'm the best there is in my position, and, like, I feel like on an intellectual level, you know, these guys don't necessarily all think that they're, like, legitimately the best player, but you have to pretend that you are, because it's the only way you're ever going to have a chance to get there. So I do think it's good to see that from Ritter, and we'll see, you know, hopefully he can back up the talk and back up the confidence with his on-field play. I know we've gotten a lot of questions about, you know, can Ritter start week one? Does he have a chance and all that? And we will certainly get to that here shortly, because I don't think there's too much else we need to talk about with OTAs. But, you know, I do like to hear that. And I think, you know, the good news is that, you know, we're seeing these players on the field for the first time. Everyone's sort of looking like advertised. No one's, you know, everyone is like London's ankle injury looks okay. That was, you know, something that could have potentially lingered a little bit into the off season, but he seems to be good to go with that. I think it's so far so good on that. The other thing would be, like, next Wednesday we might have something to talk about with Deion Jones. I know Robert Kelly mentioned that there was a rumor going around that Debo, like, Deion Jones might go to the Ravens for a fifth round pick. I mean, I don't know the I don't know the Ravens depth chart well enough to know if that's a move that they would make, but I do think a fifth round pick is probably what he's going to end up going for. I mean, I hope it's more than that. It could easily be less too, but yeah, particularly if the Falcons do pay his roster bonus, like, I do think that a fifth round pick sounds about right, you know, and that would be great, right? Because we just sent a fifth round pick to the Raiders for Bryan Edwards. We get a fifth round pick back for Debo. It's all good. You know, we're back where we started. So, you know, I sort of suspect that he's probably more likely to go to the Cowboys or the Jets. I mean, those are sort of the favorites to acquire him, you know, for obvious reasons, right? You know, Jeff Ulbrich is with the Jets. Dan Quinn's with the Cowboys. The Cowboys have plenty of cap space to make it work. The Jets could easily move money around to get there. I do think he's going to be traded. We'll see where he goes. But I do think, Robert, that a fifth is probably a reasonable pick to expect back. I mean, it could be more or less, but I think that's about what we're talking about. It's not going to be a day two pick, but you know, maybe the ceiling would be like a fourth rounder, floor could be as low as like a sixth rounder, probably. I mean, the Falcons probably take whatever they can get for him, but I do think it's going to happen though. I mean, we saw Jeff Schultz report it, right? So, you know, are you sort of in the same feeling there, Adnan, that it sort of seems inevitable that Debo's going to be on the way out?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think if he's not out this year, I mean, I'd be surprised. But I think his days in Atlanta are numbered. I don't think that he's going to be a Falcon long term. And I remember every single time, I think I mentioned this last week, but the Falcons coaching staff, when talking about the linebackers, on more than one occasion, they have not mentioned Deion Jones by name. Like, they have listed out the team's linebackers, the guys in the linebacker room. And Deion Jones, whom you'd think would be the name at the top of that list, being the veteran here and being one of the captains of the defense, he was not mentioned at all. And, you know, I feel like Deion Jones, he kind of brought this upon himself at this point.
Yeah.
Like, all we were looking for is effort. Like, sure, this team wasn't great last year. Like, I think, you know, they won seven games, which I think is a testament to the coaches. But I think that was more of a fool's gold, seven wins. Just looking at, I think they win something like 6-1 in one score games, which normally tends to balance out and even out. So I think they beat a lot of, like, you know, a lot of rookie quarterbacks.
They beat the bad teams. consistently. Yeah,
I mean, I'm not going to fault them for beating the bad teams. That's a start.
Yeah. Yeah.
We weren't beating the bad teams a couple of years ago. Like, for the last 3 years, we weren't beating anyone.
Yeah.
But, you know, the point I'm trying to make is, no, this team wasn't great last year. And, you know, so that's okay. But what's not acceptable is the lack of effort. Like, if you're going out there and you're trying and you're, you know, playing your hardest, I can't really say anything. Like, you know, if the team just doesn't have talent, they don't have talent. You know, we'll figure it out. But I can't say anything about you as a player because you're going out there and you're giving it your all. Deion Jones the last couple of years hasn't done that. Like, last year he's taken plays off, you know, in the middle of the field. You've seen him not put in all of that effort, you know, that you've seen with Dan Quinn. Ever since Dan Quinn was fired, he's had a big effort issue. I remember he had the same thing a couple of years ago after Raheem Morris took over. And, you know, we were noticing it, like, man, Deion Jones, he's just playing at half pace out there. And that's just so unacceptable, especially being the veteran of a team. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he was named a team captain on defense last year.
I don't think so. And that's kind of telling too. Yeah.
But for you to go out there and just set that as the example, especially for the young guys around you on this team, like, if I was Dean Pease, I'd want him out of here as soon as possible, to be honest. Like, especially Pease, who is one of those old school guys who that he's not tolerating that shit.
No, that's part of the reason why I was surprised they didn't trade him off early before his roster bonus kicked in too. But I mean, it's, you know, he's a good player. He's had some really good years here. This is just not a good fit for him. And I think the lack of effort is not going to be something that this coaching staff will tolerate. So I hope he ends up going somewhere else and finding success. And I hope the Falcons get the cap relief and they get, you know, some kind of pick back. I think that would be great. So everyone's happy, you know.
And Kevin, if you want to talk about, we can talk about the salary cap implications of a June 1st trade as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I broke it down. Yeah. I did break it down in a tweet recently,
I think that'll free up what, 8 million. Is it in cap space for the Falcons this year if they want
it? It's a little bit more. Let me see if I can find it. It's different than the exact numbers because they have to pay his roster bonus, as far as I know. So therefore they don't get the full saving. Like if they had traded him before the roster bonus, they would have saved like 14.7. Well, it would have been different because it would have been pre-June 1st. They would have saved more next year. But as it stands now, the post June 1st saves like 12.4 million or something like that. So it's a significant amount. And, you know, I don't know that they would go spend all of it either. Like, they might try to roll some over to next year, but
yeah, his cap hit, if he plays this year, like right now,
20 books, million,
his cap hit is $20 million.
Yeah.
Which I think it might be the richest cap hit on the team.
It is.
On the defense. Yeah.
It's the richest on the whole team. Yeah.
Well, other than the dead cap that we're paying Ryan and Julio Jones.
Yes,
but
that's true. Yeah, technically speaking, yes.
Yeah, Matt Ryan is technically the team's highest paid player this year.
Yes. Yep.
But yeah, you know, we're eating our vegetables. It's all coming off next year.
$63 million in dead cap. Yep.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just
get it all out of the way at once. I think that's a good idea. Just bite the bullet, get it all done. So,
which is the exact opposite of what the Saints are doing. And I recall we were questioning, is Terry Fontenot going to take that Saints approach this year where he, you know, kicks that can down the road year after year after year, which Mickey Loomis has done again. But it's the exact opposite. I think Terry Fontenot is just so scarred from having to work around the cap every single year in New Orleans that he came in here and he's like, all right, we're never doing that shit here. which I support. I'm completely fine. Like, this, the Falcons are going to have the most cap space in the NFL next year, especially after getting rid of Deion Jones. I think they'll have around 100 million next year, and that's with Calvin Ridley's 11 million on the books, where we don't know what's going to happen with him. We don't know if there's going to be a trade imminent there. But yeah, you're talking about. So it is 12 million this year. I know the dead cap will go the dead cap will be 12, but I thought that with the 20 million cap hit, that's where I got the $8 million from.
Yeah, it's
the 12 from the 20.
Yeah, it's because when you do the post-June 1st, it splits the dead cap into two seasons. So I think it's more like 12, but it's because of the roster bonus and everything, it chunks it up kind of weird. But yeah, it's a significant amount, and I don't know that they would spend it all either. So you might, you know, be able to carry some of that savings over to next year as well. And then you know, any cap you don't spend this year rolls over to next year, so they could easily add more too. I mean, at a certain point, it's like, okay, we have enough cap space, but you know, we'll see.
And I mean, having 12 mil in dead cap next year it's not as bad as it has been the past few years, where you really have to navigate it, because like I said, it's like $100 million in cap space next year, like more or less. Well, I mean, we'll see what happens given given extensions and what happens with Calvin Ridley, but like 12 mil is just going to be a drop in the bucket.
Yeah. I mean, hey, I wouldn't be upset about it, because again, next year, anything we don't spend can roll over again. So, hey, why not? We have also a surprise appearance from Director of Guest Personnel, Evan Birchfield. Evan, how are we doing tonight?
Hey, fellas. Good. Just figured I'd stop by and see what y'all
do. Evan, your microphone's very mute.
It's very quiet.
It's very. It's, we can hear you, but it's very.
It sounds
quiet.
Like it's far away. Yes.
Okay. Let me put in the old school wired ones, and I'll be right back.
Okay.
All right. Now that we got rid of Evan.
Yeah. Great job. Great job on that one.
I'm kidding.
Yeah, I know. I know. The other thing. We had a question from Robert Kelly asking about a bold take on a surprise player to make the roster week one. I know I have one. So I'll give mine while you guys can think about it for a second. You know, I don't know if you know the dregs of the roster, but yeah, I mean, mine is still going to be Seth Vernon, that UDFA punter. Just because I think, you know, Dom Maggio, no offense to Dom, like that dude has continued to stick with this team through like multiple regimes. And like he just sticks around. Like he never actually punts the ball in the season, but he does stick around. So like,
I'm really sad that we let Morrison go. Like,
yeah,
Morrison really good last
year. He was good. They clearly wanted to just. Yeah. He was, player of the month.
Player of the week. Was it month?
Yeah, I think it was month at some point. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So, you know, I do think they're trying to get younger at that spot with a cheap and cheaper too. And not that Morrison was expensive either, but you know, I do think it's gonna be Seth. I would say Seth Vernon, the punter, just because I think he's a really good special teams coverage player too. He's like 6'5", 230 or something like that, like former wide receiver. So he can tackle too. He might be the new Bosher in that regard. But I think he averaged like 44.9 yards per punt last year, which was among the best in the NCAA, even with the punt god involved. So, you know, that's a very good number. He's coming out of Portland State, so it's a smaller school. But again, like punting is pretty much punting, regardless of the level of competition. I mean, in terms of like
I feel like you're stealing Evan's thunder here.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, no, he might have gone with the special teams guy. But yeah,
can you hear me?
Oh, yes, yeah, we can hear you
now.
Yeah, yeah.
It's much
okay.
better now.
All right, cool. What was the question?
Surprise player to make the roster this year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And who did
Adnan I went with the punter. With? Adnan hasn't gone yet, so we can let Adnan go first.
Okay,
if you want to think about
Adnan
it.
Go.
Yeah.
Yes, let me think about it.
Yeah.
Surprise player. I haven't really gone through the dregs.
You haven't
like
done a deep dive on the UDFA class.
Very,
yet.
Very deep
wow.
dive.
So disappointed.
I don't know. Maybe Tyler Vrabel, Mike's son. Mm-hmm. The Falcons definitely will have some competition for the tackle position. I'm not that he's going to be like starting or anything, but
right.
You're probably going to have Jermaine Ifedi as the swing tackle for the team. You have McGarry and Jake Matthews. Maybe the team I think there's going to be an opening for Vrabel to fight it out with Colby Gossett for that fourth tackle position, because teams, I don't know if the team will be super comfortable with going into the season with just three tackles on the roster. But yeah, so I'll go with Tyler Vrabel just because of positional value.
Yeah, I think he could be a guy that maybe transitions to guard too. And we know that the Falcons have space at guard.
No, their guards are just,
you know, their guards are great. Their guards are great.
You know, their guards are, you know, they're on a roster.
They guard technically. They do guard. Yeah. Just not in the way that you hope. But Evan, where are you leaning? Any sleeper, you know, surprise picks for the roster here?
Yeah, I like Adnan's pick of Vrabel a lot, because I think I could definitely see that happening. But Nathan Landman is like one of the names not mentioned that I will go with. He's a pretty big linebacker. I think he's like 6'3", 240 or something like that. Yeah. And was very good at Colorado. I actually thought he'd be drafted later, but he didn't end up, and that's good value for the Falcons, who, you know, all of a sudden linebacker seemed like it was a strength for this team, and now it's, you know, not so much. a lot of younger guys at the positions. When you consider Foy is, you know, no longer on the team, and Deion Jones is not good, but probably won't be on the team come the season start. So yeah, he's a guy I could definitely see, you know, slipping in there. I know they got Anderson in the draft, but Nathan Landman would be my pick.
Yeah, I think that's a really good one. I think that if Deion Jones gets traded, I would say Landman's actually like a favorite.
Yeah.
If they keep five linebackers, because, you know, I mean, then it's Michael Walker, Rashawn Evans, Nick Kwiatkowski, and Troy Anderson. But if they keep a fifth guy, it's like Landman has to beat out like Dorian Etheridge from last year, who was another UDFA linebacker mm-hmm. that ended up making it. And like Rashad Smith, sort of like an NFL journeyman type of guy. So like the path is clear for him, you know, with Landman. It's just like, has he fully recovered from his knee injury, his serious injury that he had back in college? Because that seemed to sap some of his athleticism. But he's, I mean, productive, reliable linebacker.
A couple other guys just to keep a name on, Jared Bernhardt, the guy everybody knows about who was like really good in lacrosse or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Just like kind of fun names that it's like, oh, he could be really good or just be completely off the roster. I mean, this time of the year, there's always those players like that everyone hypes up and stuff, but he you know, certainly sounds like a dude who has the athleticism and stuff. It'll just be interesting how much, you know, because I think he was a quarterback. Transition and playing football was pretty interesting. So that'll be, because he was at Maryland, I think, playing lacrosse. And then where was it he ended up? Smaller school.
Yeah, yeah. It was like,
It was somewhere.
Yeah, it was it was like Ferris State or something like that.
Ferris State, right, yeah. Right. And, you know, that's a name to watch. They, you know, they got a couple of receivers like Tyshawn James and Stanley Berryhill. Barry Hill's probably more well known, but both of those guys have big size that they kind of been looking at. And like Matt Hankins, I believe that was the corner from Michigan.
Yeah,
That's another name to keep an eye on. But what's interesting is like there's, you know, and we saw in recent years, especially under the new regime, how the you know undrafted free agents have been able to make an impact compared to that last year, I think it was, where literally with Dan Quinn and Dimitroff were literally none of the undrafted players.
Yeah, yeah, 2020.
I mean, they already got a raw deal because there was no preseason stuff right. like that. But like none of them stuck really.
No, not at all.
As opposed to last year, and now this year, there's some, you know, there's some opportunity for those guys. So I think all the names we kind of mentioned are like realistic shots to make the roster.
We're really covering our bases here. Like we are giving you analysis on the undrafted free agents. Like this is some May peak, content right here.
Peak May content.
Let me shamelessly plug anyone who hasn't read. I did interviews with a couple of the guys. Trey Webb, who actually made the roster after rookie minicamp, was one of the guys I talked to, and that can be found on the falcoholic.com. And I already talked to him. He might come on one of the shows here in a couple weeks.
So. Yeah, Montana State. Yeah. Shout out.
Let them know, Evan, anyone who does come on the show is an instant favorite of the show, and we will
talk you up. Yeah.
We will shamelessly push that agenda.
Yes.
Definitely.
Without fail, for sure. I had pulled up Nate Landman's stats while you were talking, and his 2018 was nuts. 104 total tackles, 15 tackles for loss, 4 sacks, 2 interceptions. So, I mean, that's pretty crazy. And his 2019 was none too shabby either. So, you know, that was before the injury. So, you know, he was a like potential like day 2 sort of pick before the injury. But, you know, if he can recover. I mean, even last year, he had 6 tackles for loss, you know, 4 pass deflections. In 7 games, 63 tackles. So, I mean, that's respectable production, too. It's just he's probably more of a base package, early down thumper type of guy in his current state. But I do like me some Nate Landman. I think he has a great shot.
But yeah. By the way, I know, like, this isn't talking about the sort of a little bit, but the preseason. Evan just mentioned the preseason. I just wanted to express some vindication that I felt.
Yeah.
And the preseason, I remember last year when we were talking about the preseason, you know, I was questioning it a little bit of why Arthur Smith, you know, wasn't starting any of the starters. Like, you know, I said I couldn't really be too upset because, you know, there's injuries in play and you don't want any of your guys getting hurt. But I was skeptical at, you know, not playing any of the starters in preseason and then expecting there to be success right away, especially for a new regime, a new offense. And, you know, I remember people being like, oh, no, like, you know, that's dumb. Like, you know, don't play any of the starters, blah, blah, blah. Well, apparently now Arthur Smith admitted that he was wrong.
He said
that he's going to change his approach and he said we will probably see the starters playing more in the preseason. He said we'll probably play everybody. Yeah, so
that'll help the show. Yeah.
That'll absolutely help the show. Yeah. So yes, this is just me taking my victory lap for that take.
Oh yeah.
I do not forget.
I will miss all of the Matt Sims simulator takes.
Oh,
but,
we'll probably
you know,
get plenty of back quarterback
play. We will, I'm sure. But it'll be the Franks machine now or something. We'll have to workshop that one.
Yeah, there's 3. Preseason this year will be so – it'll be – I think it'll be more fun than
– Oh, yeah.
In the long term. Because you have the Desmond Ridder, Marcus Mariota quarterback competition.
Yep.
We haven't had a quarterback competition since 2008 here in Atlanta.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Not to mention, I mean, you look across the board, like receiver group, once you get past, I mean, Bryan Edwards, we assume will be a starter, obviously Drake London and Tate. But like when you get past those guys, it's like anyone can move up or down.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, just looking at other positions, depth on the offensive line, defensive line depth, obviously there's could be a ton of movement there. Cornerback group, there's a, you know, some pretty good depth there, but you know, we've seen in past year, like Darren Hall last year, you know, a young dude made an impact. There's some other young guys and there's some free agents like Tease Tabor brought in. Like, how is he?
Wachowski.
You know? Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's,
I think it's going to be interesting.
Oh yeah. No, the defense, it's a special, there's a lot of young, promising pieces on this defense. Like, I cannot wait to see what this pass rush looks like, even in the preseason. You're talking about, you know, Ebikadi, Ogundeji out there. You have, I'm having a brain fart right now. The fourth round rookie from Malone, D'Angelo Malone as well. So, I mean,
Troy Anderson, I'm excited to see how he.
Troy Anderson,
because he seems like the guy who's got like the most hype, quietly most hype maybe, just because of how athletic and Kevin, wasn't he the fastest linebacker or something?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think it's 99.9. So maybe there was one guy that was like slightly faster.
Oh, okay.
But
okay.
I mean, pretty much, yes. 4.42 is faster than Kyle Pitts for the record.
And by the way, like Troy Anderson and Kyle Pitts, remember, we were fawning over his 40 time as well.
Oh, yeah. He's 99.7. So
Kyle Pitts' 40 time is what was the turning point for me in the draft process. Like, because the entire time I was like, no to a tight end, no. Then he ran that 40, and I'm like,
I don't know. You could talk me into it. Yeah, you know, it's spicy. Yeah.
But no, Troy Anderson and some of the tea leaves that I've read from rookie minicamp, Troy Anderson's looked really, really good.
Yeah, I suspect that. I mean, he's gonna thrive in training camp. Like, when he can just fly around, and before the pads come on, he's gonna look amazing. And like, hopefully, that confidence will help him. You know, I don't want to count Troy Anderson out, because this is a guy that's played three positions in four seasons at Montana State. Like, he played
two of them,
quarterback, running back, and linebacker, and was all conference at every single one. So I don't necessarily want to like say that he can't do anything he can't be a star this year. He's gonna take away all this time. Like, I mean, this is a guy that has made a living out of just sort of changing positions and doing whatever is asked of him very quickly. So like, this is clearly a smart guy. You know, the NFL is a different beast, but I do like his upside for sure, and I think we'll see him sooner rather than later. Well, speaking of this roster talk, let's get into quarterback and running back, which is our positions tonight. Quarterback, there's three guys. Marcus Mariota, the veteran, the favorite to start, I guess. I think we'd all be comfortable saying he's the favorite. Then we've got the rookie upstart who's coming in saying he's going to depose a veteran, and Desmond Ridder, third round pick this year. And then UDFA. Yeah. Oh, is that your favorite?
Yeah. No, the coach's favorite.
Arthur, oh, the coach's favorite. Yeah. Yeah.
Felipe Franks.
And then we got, Felipe Franks bringing up the third quarterback spot, who I think could still make the roster if they keep three again, certainly. And I think he's certainly a guy that's worth like keeping around the practice squad. But I would be shocked if he's a serious part of the like starting competition. But let's kick it off with Mariota, a guy who I know some fans are really quite excited about. I'm not quite there yet. I do think you could have done a lot worse with your bridge sort of starter. I think Mariota is at least intriguing. You know, if you're looking for a potential reclamation project, very low cost, former number two overall pick, you know, he sort of checks all the boxes, never had an off-field problem in his life. So, you know, that's a nice change from who the Falcons were pursuing previously. I'm a big fan of Mariota. I think that if he wins the starting job, you know, we can be confident that he's at least going to facilitate the offense in a way that's watchable week to week. I don't know that it will be a high-end offense by any means, but he does have a winning record as a starter, I believe. We're close to it. Yeah, I think two out of three seasons as a starter, he had a winning record. And then the third season, he had like a drastically losing record that pushed him just under 500. But this is a guy that's won, you know, almost as many games as he's lost. And let's be real. I mean, some of those Titans teams he was a part of were not very good teams either. So it's not all on him necessarily, but he's been a guy that sort of failed to stay healthy, failed to take that next step away from being like a good plus backup.
Former number two pick. So Marcus Mariota, I think this is a true one-year bridge. Like, I think that this team, I think that this coaching staff truly, truly hopes that Mariota isn't on the team next year. And I mean, I don't know, that's dramatic to say, but just looking at the contract that they gave him, next year he's going to account for a $14.5 million cap hit, and you get $12 million in cap savings if you part ways with Mariota next year. I think that they truly hope that he's that one-year bridge into Desmond Ridder starting next year, or into, you know, I'm not discounting the possibility of them drafting a quarterback, even if it's high next year, depending on how Ridder looks. But Mariota, this made sense from the jump. Remember, the team, the coaching staff, immediately signed Mariota, I think the same day of the Matt Ryan.
Yeah, it was like right after they got
It was
rid
like
of
immediately
him.
After, yeah.
Like, there's no way that they didn't already have some talks in place and a deal in place. Just because Mariota, and this is the reason why I think he's, I would pencil him in as the week one starter. I think he's a near lock to start week one, because remember, Mariota played in Arthur Smith's offense in Tennessee. Like, Arthur Smith was his offensive coordinator. Granted, Mariota got benched for Ryan Tannehill, which was the correct move to make because, you know, they then went to the AFC Championship. They needed a true, better game manager in Tannehill to ride Derrick Henry to the AFC title game. I think this was in 2018. But Marcus Mariota knows Arthur Smith's offense. Like, he has run this offense before. And he's run this offense successfully before. I'm sorry, I think it was 2019. I think he won more games than he lost. And in 2018, he had a 7-6 record. He was 9-6 as a starting quarterback in 2017. He's won games with Arthur Smith at the helm. And, you know, I think that they want to give Desmond Ridder some time. But if this team is not in playoff contention, which I don't think it will be, by midseason and going into late season, then I think they need to, you know, kind of take the training wheels off Ridder and give him the keys to this car, so to speak, just to see what you really have in him. I think it'll be a failed season if you don't see what you have in these rookies and you still miss it. Like, I mean, if this team wins 10, 11 games and Marcus Mariota is slinging it, then by all means.
Then that's your answer. Like, you're just going to keep Mariota at like $14 million next year and it'll be a bargain. So, because you're not, that's the thing. It's sort of like they've set themselves up. Like, if like, you know, all of our wishes are granted, and I guess depending on your wish, you either want Mariota or Ridder to be really good. If Mariota is really, really good, there's no way this team is in contention for like a top pick. So you could probably kiss the quarterback selection goodbye because the top guys are going to be gone. Like, if Mariota's out there slinging it and looking like a really good quarterback, that they wouldn't, you know, they're probably, first of all, going to be interested in sticking with Mariota. And second of all, they're probably going to be picking, like, you know, the back half of the top 10, you know, maybe the early part of the teens. If Mariota's really good, they're probably
If he's good.
Yeah, if he's good, I'm saying, like, in this make-believe situation where Mariota's actually this, like, great player, they, like, you won't be in position to get one of these good quarterback, like, these elite, you know, rookie quarterbacks anyway without a massive trade-up. So,
and the thing is, I think something we haven't even mentioned once, if Mariota's good, but you really like what you have with the Ridder, you could even, like, trade Mariota next year. Like, he's going to be 30 years old. He's going to have a very manageable cap hit for a quarterback. You know, you could trade him to the next team that wants that bridge quarterback.
Yeah, exactly. But, so, if he plays well, you know, but they do need to see Ridder, though. That's the other part of the discussion. Like, we need to see Ridder at some point.
Yeah, I think the only justification to not giving Ridder a legitimate chance, even if that's him starting in week 10, week 11, whatever, is if this team goes to the playoffs or is in that playoff contention until the very last day, which, I mean, I doubt it.
It's doubtful. You know, it's possible because we're not haters here. You know, I think there is a narrow path for the Falcons to walk to relevance. But
By the way, us criticizing the team and not predicting double-digit wins, I don't think that makes us haters.
If we were just saying this team sucks, you know, whatever, like, that'd be one thing. But I feel like we're giving reasoned analysis. We're trying to give you guys accurate information.
Right. If we said, like, last year they were going to win 12 games, would that have been good? We would have been completely wrong.
Yeah, like, exactly.
We're just being honest.
Yeah, yeah. Like, we're not haters. We want the team to win.
Yeah, I mean, I think we lose credibility if every year we just go out there and we're like, oh, this team's going to win 13 games every year, even though, you know, they don't look. Because it's like, I mean, if you want, you know, just sunshine, rainbows, then, you know, AtlantaFalcons.com will never say anything bad because that's the team's website. You know,
exactly.
So, yeah, Mariota's MVP candidate. Over
yeah, you can always
he's battling for a job still.
Yeah, you can always read like Falcons press releases. And, yeah, you know, yeah, there's not everything. There's not anything bad like in that. So if that's how you want to roll, then you know, by all means, I respect it. But
and the thing is, we want to be wrong. Like I'm not.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Hey, if Mariota wants to go out and win 11 or 12 games next year, with that you know pretty tough schedule. I hope he does, and I hope I'm completely wrong. Like, I'd be perfectly okay with
that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, we are fans.
We're not haters.
Yeah, like, we are supporting, we are rooting for this team, but...
Yeah, there's like, we also have to write about them, and, like, you know, we try to back
it's
up.
It's fair criticism. Everybody at the site does fair criticism.
I will say,
not bashing anymore.
If we ever criticize, we will give you justification for why we are thinking. Like, we're not going to go out there. It's not like me talking about the Saints, and I'm like, fuck the Saints.
Yeah.
Like,
no, we're absolutely haters about the Saints. Yeah, there's no impartiality whatsoever there. But.
By the way, Kevin, I think you need an answer to the readers for picking the Saints to beat the Falcons.
Well, I'm going to pick this. It's just so that we can deepen their eventual suffering when we play them in Week 15 and knock them out of the playoff race in New Orleans. Mm. Because... you know, week one, it's going to be a really tough task to beat New Orleans in week one. Like, with this new quarterback, with this offense that's probably going to struggle out of the gate, like, going to play one of the best defenses in the NFL on the road week one. Or, well, it's at home.
No, we're playing at home.
So it's on the road, yeah.
No.
Right, you know, so it's at home, so it's on the road, yeah.
Okay.
That's being a hater. Yeah. For
yeah.
Sure.
That was a bit uncalled for. Yeah. in fairness, I think that the Falcons fans will pack out Mercedes-Benz in Week One.
I think so for sure.
It's the Saints. It's Week One, and then after that,
it's a you got to play.
We won't talk about that. But I think Week One, the Benz will be popping.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Week one's the week to go because hope springs eternal in week one. So that's a good week to go.
And also, the Falcons win that game, they'll be above 500 for the first time since 2017. Where it's like, how can you not criticize this team? That they have literally not been above 500 for a single day since 2017.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Oh, shout out to Zach Langston, by the way, for the $10 tip. Zach, thanks much. He says, keep it up. I need the Falcons content all year round. Yeah, we do too. Why do you think we do this? It's for us as well. Like, we got to have something to talk about too, or else we go crazy. So appreciate that, man. Thank you. Getting back to the quarterback conversation, I mean,
we really went off track with that.
We did. It's fine.
I felt like it needed to be said.
It did. Yeah. No, it was relevant. It was tangentially relevant, but it was relevant. Mariota, I think we all think, is going to be the starter week one, more than likely. I think I said it in a tweet that, like, you know, Ritter's got, like, a 20% chance maybe to be the week one starter. That
it would
be generous.
Like, a preseason meltdown where Mariota's just throwing ducks, interceptions left and right against starters of the opposite team. And Ritter's just in there slinging it, like, left and right, and it's just, like, everything's going for a touchdown. Because there's no benefit to rush him out unless it's clear that it's Mariota's broken. Like, we're not winning anything with him. Which, I've been in the future, but we probably won't get to that point. Even if it's close and Ritter's, like, clearly, it's like, okay, this kid's special. He's not going to be the week one starter unless Mariota's just, like, literally, like, terrible.
Yeah, or he gets hurt or something. And obviously, we're not hoping for that. That would not be a good situation for
anyone.
So,
of course.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think with Ritter, you know, we talked about it earlier in the show. He is a guy that's likely to have an earlier, to be ready earlier than a lot of rookies because of the way he plays the game, because of his college offense. And he's got the leadership qualities. He's got the experience. I do think we're going to see Ritter. So I'm interested to know what you guys think the timeline is for that. I guess maybe week eight, you know, before or after week eight, you guys think we'll see Desmond Ritter out there?
I do. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think it'll be, I can't remember off the top of my head because I don't have a schedule right in front of me, but there's those string of games where it's really tough. And then we have, I think, the Bears, the Commanders, yeah. and Panthers. I think that's like week 11-ish or something in that area. Yeah. If the Falcons are like to, you know, they've got one or two games where they've won, that might be a time you see them. But I don't think it's going to come, you know, until late, maybe even after the week 14 bye or whatever.
Yeah, I think week 10 is, that's sort of what I feel like week 10 is sort of around there. We can get, you know, 7-8 games worth of Desmond Ridder at that point.
And it makes sense because the benefit of by week 10, let's say they make the move at week 10. By week 10, you know what you're getting from Mariota, which is probably not like, oh, he's the quarterback of the future, obviously, if you're considering benching him. Where with Ridder, this whole process of taking somebody, you know, in the third round or whatever, it's the, you want to see what the value is, because like Adnan said, he doesn't prevent you from taking a quarterback next year. So what good is it to start him for a game or maybe even two, because that's not enough to really judge someone, where if he's able to finish out with like 6 or 7 games, it's like, okay, you have a better idea, you know, in what's probably a losing season that doesn't end up in the playoffs, but at least you go in the off season knowing, we think there's something here with this dude. We don't have to go quarterback in the draft, or yeah, we gave him a run, not really high on him, but you know, maybe we'll keep him around as a backup or something, but we're going to still look in the draft as a quarterback. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Adnan, what do you think, you know, in terms of when we'll see Ridder? Yeah.
I think is where having that week 14 bye really hurts. Yeah. Because, you know, that bye week is where you're looking at as like, you know, the transitional week a little bit. Having a week 14 bye just seems ridiculous in the first place. Like, I'm all for a late bye, but that seems super late.
It's extremely late. It is. You know, I think if you're like a playoff contender, you're probably pretty happy with that bye. But like, yeah, for the Falcons, it's not really super valuable either way.
I hate having the super early bye as well, which is why next year we'll have a week 4 bye.
Oh, yeah, probably. Yeah.
But yeah, I think the week that I'm looking at is if I had to guess, maybe week 11. And I say this because you'll have had 10 games with Mariota. I feel like that the team will be at that point 3-7 maybe. After those 10 games, maybe if everything breaks right, well, I don't know. They'd have to win. They'd have to be 3 out of 3 in divisional games to be 4-6, in my opinion, because I don't think they're beating the Bengals, 49ers, Bucks. Well, 3 out of 4. I don't think they'll beat the Browns either. Well,
I mean, maybe. If Watson's not playing, they might. Maybe they'll have a chance against the Browns.
I mean, even if they have Mayfield there still, like that team is still.
You know, that'd be really funny if they keep Mayfield too. That'd be hilarious.
The way I'm looking at it, I think they can beat New Orleans, and they'll beat Seattle, and then you have the 2 Panthers games.
Yeah, that's what you're hoping for. Yeah.
So 4-6 seems okay. I mean, I think that's like the high end of the spectrum.
Yeah, yeah.
But the reason why I am saying week 11 is because that week 10 game against the Panthers is on Thursday night. And you at least have that extra 3 days of rest. That's sort of as close to a bye week as you can get without having an actual bye week. I don't think that they'll put him in for week 10 on a very short week coming off of that Chargers game. And then having only a few days to prepare, and then, you know, you're completely changing your quarterback there. So I will say my official guess will be week 11, but it wouldn't surprise me if it's a little sooner. Maybe they pull the cord on Mariota after week 7 or week 8. And also there's a chance that Mariota gets hurt as well. Like, he's been very injury prone in the past.
Yeah.
And if he does get hurt, then, you know, it's kind of – you're just kind of throw Ridder into the fire a little bit. Hopefully it's not against a ravaging defense.
Right. Yeah. And, I mean, I need Mariota to at least make it through week 2, you know, like so that Ridder doesn't have to get massacred by the Rams.
I'd say week 5, because, you know, you still have the Browns and the Bucks defenses in there as well. And Also, while the Seahawks team isn't very intimidating, you still, I don't think you want to throw a rookie into that Seattle environment either.
No.
For his first game.
No, probably not. Yeah, that's a tough place to go play on the road, for sure.
Yes, I definitely think that we will see him at some point in mid-season. But, you know, if Mariota's 5-5 after 10 weeks, then, I mean, I don't see how you bench him at that point.
Right. Well, just to see how it plays out. I mean, if Mariota's looking real, like Mariota could be playing great and the team is 5-5. Like, that probably is a real, like, that could be a scenario. So the win losses alone aren't going to determine it. Now, if Mariota's, like, miserable and the defense somehow is carrying this team to, like, 4 or 5 wins, then more likely to see Ritter. But, I mean, I think we're going to see Ritter play at least, like, 4 games this year.
Probably it just more, makes sense, but, yeah, from the aspect of looking at your future, unless they truly, you know, after those games, they're like, right, okay, Mariota's the future.
Yeah, unless it's then clear it that Mariota's sense, the future, right? And then, right, then you have your future answer one way or the other. But
yeah, because there's certain stuff you're not learning in practice or what you saw in preseason. It's like you need to get him in those real games against real opponents and games that matter.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, we'll see how that goes. But, yeah, I mean, later, like, after Week 10, you know, you've got the Panthers, you've got the Bears, you've got the Commanders, you've got the Steelers that might not be quite as intimidating this year. You know, so maybe you can get Ritter in there for a few games at that point. We'll see. Yeah, and then Franks, I think we all feel pretty confident, is a practice squad slash maybe third quarterback. I mean, I think he makes a lot more sense on this depth chart now than he did last year, because I think he's a guy that makes a lot of sense as a backup and understudy for like more dual threat quarterbacks like Mariota and Ritter. He looks a lot more like those guys than Matt Ryan, for sure. So, you know, I think he's going to stick around. I think the coaching staff likes him. I hope that the tight end experiment is over. You know, I hope that we can move away from that, but I do think he's certainly worthy of keeping around, an interesting sort of player. So that brings us to running back slash fullback. We got Cordarrelle Patterson. We got Damian Williams. We got Tyler Allgeier. And then we got a competition for that last spot, Quadri Olison and Caleb Huntley. They didn't bring in anybody else. So it's actually a pretty quiet running back room. And then we got Keith Smith at fullback, friend of the show, Keith Smith. So, you know, Keith Smith's a roster lock for that alone. He's also... you know, solid fullback and a great special teams player. So we know how much they value special teams. I'd be shocked if Keith Smith wasn't the fullback this year. But yeah, I mean, how, in terms of the rest of the running back room, Evan, I'll let you sort of take the lead on that. What do you think about how that shakes out?
Well, we can pretty much, you know, Patterson's safe. Damian Williams should be safe. Tyler Allgeier, obviously safe. It's where you get to, like you mentioned, Olison and Caleb Huntley, where things get interesting, just because there's nobody else. Like, I mean, Keith Smith's a fullback. He's pretty much safe as the starting fullback. So really that's the preseason battle to keep an eye on, is Olison and Caleb Huntley. I'm a big Caleb Huntley fan, obviously. I did a undrafted free agent interview on him. What was it, 2 years ago or whatever, when he first,
last year, I think. Yeah.
And he, you know, made his way onto the, staying on the practice squad, and now he's, you know, got a real opportunity to try and make the roster. But yeah, that's an interesting matchup, because they're both, you know, Caleb Huntley's almost like a little bowling ball kind of player. When he was at Ball State, just likes run over people and stuff like that. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to see how it shakes out. That competition for the last spot, I think, is interesting too. You know, you have to think Olison maybe has the layup, because I mean, he averaged 5 yards per carry last year on 20 carries, you know, when he got a chance to play. I think it was like one game he got a bunch of carries in.
Was it the Patriots game where he was really, you know, he was running a little bit.
Yeah. Like, but, and then it looked good. I mean, he didn't get a chance again, but you know,
but yeah, I think, you know, that game's been wiped from a lot of people's memories.
Yeah, just like, that's a good thing, well, for sure.
I had the Patriots defense going in that game.
Oh, yeah, so, yeah, big time, yeah.
So, you know, it wasn't as bad for me, to be honest. But, Olison, I think it'll be a legit competition. This isn't the coaching staff that drafted Olison. He was taken in 2019, but I think that'll be one of those competitions where, you know, we'll see. It'll be very spirited and very heated in the preseason. You know, my favorite part of the preseason is always seeing that competition for the last running back spot, that competition for the last wide receiver spot, seeing what happens there, because normally it's a bunch of guys playing for one spot, and in this case it'll be Allison, Huntley, and a few undrafted guys playing for that last running back spot, because I think the Patterson, Cordero, Damian Williams, and Algier are locks. But yeah, you know, we'll see what happens. I think it'll be nice. I think Allison has a bit of a leg up just because he played in this offense last year, and like you mentioned, he looked pretty good. 5 yards per carry is really good. Like, you'll take that from any running back.
Yeah.
But you know, we'll see what happens in the preseason, and that'll be something to look for in those fourth quarters of those preseason games where all the starters are out and we're trying to still keep it entertaining when we're doing our preseason analysis.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's certainly an interesting room to consider. I mean, I do think Patterson's sort of the nominal starter, at least. I think he'll probably get the most overall touches combined, but you know, what does Damian Williams do? Like, I think he can play all three downs and do a little bit of everything. He's maybe the best pass protector, so maybe he takes over more of a third down role, and then you sort of think that Algier is going to have a chance to sort of take on more of the early down stuff. Yeah. But how do you guys sort of see the carries, the workload being split up between those three? Because I mean, while I think, you know, an Olsen and a Huntley, those guys are going to make the roster and they'll get opportunities if guys have to miss time. But the top three guys are the ones that are going to be getting carries on like a week by week basis. So.
I think they'll finally listen to me, which is what I've been wanting last year, and finally go with more of a legitimate running back by committee. Last season we saw it a little bit, but it was more so of a Patterson and Mike Davis type thing, and you know, Patterson got a lot of those running back carries just out of sheer necessity because Davis wasn't getting the job done. I think we'll see Williams. I'd be all for having Algier get some of those early downs and the short yardage work. Damian Williams splitting those carries with him. Cordero Patterson, I think, will get the most touches out of these guys. But that doesn't necessarily mean he'll get the most carries.
Right.
He'll be lined up out wide. He'll be given plenty of routes out of the backfield. He'll be used in very creative ways that Arthur Smith will think up for him. And we saw that last year. And I think that the Tyler Algier pick will unlock that even more so. Just because last year we saw Patterson break down a little bit just because out of necessity he had to be given a lot of those traditional carries out of the backfield. And I don't think that Arthur Smith wanted to do that. I think he had to, and I don't think that he wants to do that this year. So now you'll have multiple running backs to possibly take those carries, and then you can really let Cordero Patterson loose a little bit. And for the record, I was doing some research for fantasy football drafts just because, you know, it's May and I kind of got the nostalgia this week.
There you go. Yeah.
But Cordero Patterson is going like 7th, 8th round in some of these drafts. And I think that should change by August. But I think you'd be getting a steal if you got Cordero Patterson that late.
Yeah, I mean, I love just picking him up like randomly in free agency after like week two or something. And then him being like a week to week starter. you know, that I enjoyed that. You know, I think 7th to 8th, I don't know, that might be a little low considering how valuable running back is. But certainly, I think a guy that's going to be a valuable asset in fantasy. And if he gets that joint running back wide receiver tag again, that's super valuable too. So that was pretty great. I enjoyed that. Yeah, Evan, anything else you want to add on this running back group before we wrap it up tonight?
Not really. Just kind of piggybacking off what Adnan said, it's like with Patterson, it seemed like his better games were when he wasn't being forced to be like just stay in the backfield and do that thing. It's only going to benefit him to have someone else who's kind of reliable back there. So you could, you know, come up with those creative plays like Adnan said, where maybe you've got Algier and Patterson out there. And, you know, when you see a lot of the teams, it's like they bring their running back out wide, like playing receiver. And it's like you know, they put a guy on him, but it's not like they're really expecting that dude to get the ball. Where Patterson, all of a sudden you line him up outside or in the slot or something, it's like you really have to play him like he's a receiver, because, you know, he kind of is. So I think that only benefits the team. Hopefully, I don't know if it'll be Damian Williams or Algier out of the gate, but, you know, between the two of them, surely one of them will be pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I like the look of the group overall. I think it's well-rounded. I think, Algier will get a shot. I think we're going to see that Smith is more willing to use his rookie running backs than Dan Quinn was. Dan Quinn notoriously didn't use rookie running backs like at all. I think Ito Smith's first year, he was barely used. Tevin Coleman's first year, he was barely used. Quadri Olson, barely used. So, like, I think we're going to see Arthur Smith a little more willing to use Algier than Dan Quinn was. So that'll be fun to see. Yeah, guys, really appreciate everyone hanging out with us tonight. Like I said, the next Q&A session it's going to be Monday or Tuesday. We'll have that ironed out soon, but if you're interested in taking part in that, it's patreon.com/falcoholiclive. Thanks everyone for tuning in. Please do also like and subscribe if you haven't done so already. Both of those metrics numbers help us out quite a bit. Appreciate everyone for doing that. Yeah, we'll be back next week for any other news that happens to drop. We'll also, next week, it's wide receiver and tight end for the roster review, so we'll be breaking down those two positions. Before we take off, I want to thank my co-host this evening. First of all, we have Adnan Ikic. He is at Say Which Way on the Twitters. Adnan, anything you're working on you'd like to plug?
Just stick with the Falcoholic for any and all things Falcons related. We're doing that roundtable game by game. This is basically, whenever anyone says this, it means the answer is no. you know, just stick with the Falcoholic.
Yep.
Yeah, how about that? We went over an hour easy.
Yeah.
Like, easy. We're
literally zero news. So
there is nothing going on out there. Not a single thing. Like, rookie OTAs don't even count. And, you know, we got over an hour, and shout out to the viewers too, man. Like, there was over 110 of you guys. I think it peaked at like 120.
Yeah.
Just like sticking with us, talking May football out here. And May, I mean, football. I think that's pretty awesome, because I feel like what we all have that, we're all just a little bit addicted to that NFL narcotic that we're having withdrawals from at this point in the year. But, you know, it'll be back. It'll be back soon, just a few months from now. And the cycle repeats. But yeah, shout out to you guys for, you know, watching with us and for being with us on a warm summer night in May when you could be doing, you know, literally anything else.
Literally anything, yes. Yes, we appreciate you guys for hanging out with us in this late May edition of the Falcoholic Live. Also with us tonight, Evan Birchfield. He's at Evan Birchfield on Twitter. Evan, anything else you'd like to plug?
We have our positional reviews or post-draft reviews or whatever. I did the corner ones, and special teams will be up. I'm not sure, by the end of the week or early next week. Also, do my fourth annual 32, teams, 32 sleepers fantasy article, which you'll post sometime in early June. So be on the lookout for that if you're into super early fantasy content. And I guess we'll be doing a Falcoholic.
You know, thing, I am, right? Evan. I just told you I'm up for the draft board for.
Yeah. Well, I'm not to self brag, but look at my past one. I had some random hits that I got. I mean, I'm not going to say I'm good at it, but got lucky on a couple names. Usually with the Falcons, I kind of struggle, but I had Russell Gage as a sleeper. I didn't foresee the whole Calvin Ridley thing. But this year, Actually, I'm not going to spoil it. Just look for the article.
Look for the article, guys. Read the article.
What was your best hit from last year overall?
Maybe Amon-Ra St. Brown.
Yeah, that's
but a good one. If you go through, it's like, again, not trying to humble brag or anything like that, but there's some really like, it's like, I didn't know it was going to be that good, but it's like, that guy turned out pretty well.
St. Brown's going to be a good late pick too. Again,
I know
it's May. But going through that, I see him ranked in around like seventh round. I mean, I feel like that would be a steal. He won like playoff games last
People get scared off of free agent ads. Like DJ, I think DJ Chark went there, right? So maybe they're kind of like skeptical of that. But it's like, if the dude can play, the dude can play. Like, you shouldn't get too scared from, you know, somebody else being at it. If anything, it might help Amon-Ra St. Brown, because then they don't have to go, okay, well, that's who it's clearly going to.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, no, definitely check that out. I'm looking forward to it. It's a good piece, especially for this time of year.
And I will be joining the Falcoholic Fantasy League this year. I was not part of it last year, but, you know, I am looking forward to... But I'm only in one fantasy league ever. I have my main league with my friends. And then I'll like, leave the Falcoholic ones. Like, I know we had a Falcoholic one every year. And I'll have that as my like secondary league, which, to be honest with you, I never really paid too much attention to. I feel like one is enough. I think there should be, everyone should be in a couple fantasy leagues.
Yeah, it, you know, it can be fun. You know, if you're doing well, it's great.
And it makes you like actually care about games you normally don't. That's my favorite part. If it's like the Browns, I can't use that as an example. Let's say the Jets and the Jags are playing on a Thursday night. Normally, you don't care, but like if you had, you know, some players in there, all of a sudden you really do care, especially if it's later in the season. So it gets you invested in games, you know, that you normally don't want to watch.
Let me tell you, like I will shamelessly be watching every single snap. Let's say I'm starting Elijah Moore. I have Elijah Moore, and you know that's the only player I'm starting. Or even if only my opponent has like one of those players, I will shamelessly watch every snap of a Jets Jaguars Thursday night game, like every single one. And I mean, I won't even care who. Like some Sundays, I'm like watching, and I'm like tracking my fantasy players and stuff, and I don't even remember who won the game.
I'm a winner because my fantasy players went off. So that's all.
That's the other benefit is like overall you become a better like NFL fan because all of a sudden you can name, you know, the fourth receiver on the Jags or something because somebody got hurt and you just like picked him up and you're really paying attention and stuff like that. So overall, it's a good thing. You know, if you want to play, you know, some people play for money, some people play for fun. Either way, you know, it just keeps football interesting.
And I mean, to be honest with you, it's more power to you if you can do like 9-10 fantasy leagues. I feel like that's a bit much just because then it's like if you're tracking them, then it's like, all right, I have this player going in this league and I'm playing against him in this league. And then it's like,
it gets dicey then. Yeah.
Yeah. It gets a little too in the weeds for me in that case.
It's like, I want him to do good, but not too good, you know?
Yeah. But I mean, definitely if you've never played it, if, you know, just start one up with your friends. And I mean that, then it just takes the whole NFL fandom to a new level. Like legitimately it's just so fun.
Yeah, it's definitely a good time. It's a good time. Dynasty's fun too, for people to partake in that. That's a good time as well. It's a little bit different. Well, guys, we will have, I'm sure, more fantasy takes for you as well because there's a long off season. So we appreciate everyone for tuning in. Thanks again, guys. I'm Kevin. I have Falcoholic Kevin. More player profiles coming this week. Like I said, patron Q&A early next week. And we'll see about getting some other great guests on here as well. We just really appreciate everyone hanging out with us tonight. We will see you guys next week on the Falcoholic Live. Until then, guys, have a great night, folks. See ya.
See you guys.